Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
To the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. Thank you for joining us, and we hope today to have a wonderful show as we discuss the deeper mysteries of spirituality. It is you that makes these shows possible, and we are grateful that our Light family supports us. And so we have asked Rogier Chardet, one of the European masters, to prepare for us interesting questions that all of us want to know, and I will do my very best to answer them as well as I can. Rogier, thank you for helping us again today on the show. I appreciate the trouble you take to collect people's emails and find out exactly what people want to know.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Please go ahead with whatever your first question is.
Well, there's a number of questions here, and I would really just like to introduce them in the following way, because I recall you once in the first week that we met, you stating in class that really the people that come to your class are system busters, and I've noticed that a lot of the, you've got the tendency of sort of really uprooting a lot of cherished concepts, you know, especially those of sort of New Age mythology, but just, you know, in general, spiritual dogma that abounds. And we've got a number of questions here which really seem to be sort of, asking for that in a way. And the first one concerns this idea of starseed, and, you know, like some, you know, being told that they're from Sirius or the Pleiades or wherever, and there seems to be this, well, basically they're asking what the function has been of the starseed experiment in ascension, and, you know, how important it has been, etc. So, and I know you've said some things on that, so I thought it might be nice to cover this one here.
Yes. There are pros and cons to the fact that star systems that wanted the Earth to succeed in becoming that pivotal point in the cosmic ascension, in other words, it would better their own planetary systems, have been sending large, had, and I should say had because it's now not permitted, but they had been sending large numbers of their own kind in here. According to what some of the Star Brothers in the Pleiades have told me, they have sent well over 1 million Pleiadians from their system, from various planets, into human births. And yes, they've come from other planetary systems as well. Well, the benefit to that was that it did give a shot in the arm to humanity at a time when it really needed a boost in consciousness. And this started around the 1945-1950s, right after the Second World War and those few years after. It started to be that starseeds had them birth here in human bodies. It did give us the shot in the arm, and obviously we have this time, after multiple failures before, managed to break free from the in-breath, out-breath cycles, which is nothing more than ascension-descension cycles, which meant that we had not succeeded in breaking free and simply raising and raising in consciousness in exponential growth. So in that way, it was very helpful. Many have come in. But what the Mother Goddess of all life, she's the mother that has created all life, and her first creation is the Father. What the Father has given and the Mother has given as an edict to all starseeds who now everyone wants to come. here because the Earth has successfully become the way shower. The Mother Goddess of all life and the Father have come here, and they have put their palace here, which is described in Revelations as the New Jerusalem, and the masters that come to my classes have frequently been able to actually see it and touch it and feel it. But it hasn't been physical enough that our hand doesn't still move through the walls. So the goal that we've been working towards for years with the various ascended master groups around the world is to create a situation in which our hand can go through the walls. Be stopped by the wall to get it that physical. But now all the starseeds want to come here. There's actually been a shield placed around the planet that they may not. The planet is for humanity and those that have already burst in here from the starseeds. Well, they've become part of the human grid. The downside of it is this. Humanity was created as a prototype, as a microcosm that would be archetypal in turning the macrocosm. The mother was, the Earth is her footstool. She and the Father are present on Earth. Man is one of the most important beings that exists in that they have been created to microcosmically represent the all. So changes that go on in the cosmos begins with man. Well, that was contaminated, if you will, by other species coming in and affecting the human grid. Now, what is a grid? Grid is an array of lines of light around the planet that tells a specific species how to be. It tells the swallows to migrate in the fall. And to come back in the spring to eat worms versus, carrots. It tells a species how to live. The human grid has had alien influences in it as a result. So recently, Mother restored that grid to pure humanness. So because, that humanity can fulfill their destiny as this archetype of the larger picture.
Right.
Does that answer it?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
The next question is actually from the same person, and he asks if this whole sort of idea of moving towards 2012, the Mayan calendar and all that, if that is still relevant to us today.
A child that sits in the middle of the merry-go-round hardly feels the merry-go-round move. We are that pivot point in the very middle. The child that sits on the outer edge of the merry-go-round can feel it go round and round with a dizzy speed. But the child in the middle is virtually undisturbed by the movement. We have not realized how much time has passed. When we became the pivot point, we have shot far beyond what for others is 2012. Far beyond. I actually had the Master Merlin. There was a wrinkle in time, and I was trying to understand what had happened because it was very pertinent to the work that Mother had given me to do, to open a specific membrane so that the Earth could move through it. And I had to understand about time clearly. And so Merlin came, and he always calls me his little flower in the past, and he pulled a little flower out of his pocket and handed it to indicate, that he was speaking to me as a little flower. But he was not able to speak the way others communicate to me, which is a telepathic communication in which I hear their language, but then I hear the translation. So he was doing a mime for me. The way he indicated is he took a calendar and he ripped it up, meaning our calendar is totally wrong and obsolete. He then took a clock and smashed it. He was saying that time had collapsed. And so, my brothers and sisters out there, what you think is 2007 or 2008, it simply is our illusion of it. The illusion of the child in the middle of the merry-go-round that it's hardly spinning at all. We have shot past those years. The Third World War that was predicted by myself previously for 2011, we came within inches of it occurring, but Mother moved the planet up a level, and then that was an obsolete future, and that was way back in 2005. So I knew when that was, you know, it was on the verge of happening, that we had already gone by 2012, 2011. We've long since shot by 2012.
Then, you know, how should we approach this matter of these Mayan calendars and all these calculations as simply a relic of the past?
Now, I will tell you that I am not up with the Mayan calendar enough to tell you exactly how far it mapped out. I don't know when it is supposed to end. So unless you know that, I cannot comment on it. I do know that it deals with the DNA strands. It deals with reality based on the four directions, but it does not take into consideration that at some point along the line, we opened up to the additional horizontal axis, which the Tree of Life, the I Ching, the Dzogchen, it doesn't take into consideration. And so at one point, the whole horizontal feminine was opened up as the originator of the masculine. It came from the direction of within, the below, the above. It's from that which the four directions were born. So, you know, I don't know that it accurately represents life as it is right now.
Or if it would be a product of the four directions only, then
it would be obsolete. That's exactly my point.
Yes. All right, and actually on a related point there, there is a lot of sort of, you know, the possibility for the potential for drama sort of attached to this sort of whole idea of 2012. Let's see, well, there's actually multiple questions about that one, but we had one question which... from a pod member, actually, which was really about this idea, if it wouldn't just be better if society would just fall apart so that we could start anew. And I mention that because that's, of course, an idea which is sort of, you know, the pandemonium that's attached to this idea of 2012. So... what do you think of this idea of, you know, we should just have the chaos and then maybe something good can come?
Well, let's first go back to this issue of 2012. If I may, then I will address the second. Or perhaps I should start the other way around, because the second answer is much quicker. It's Mother's intention that the transition from a secular to a sacred government be done gracefully, that there not be pandemonium, chaos, and hardship that bring grief and pain to the innocent. The reason for that is that the histories of the cycles of the fall is given in my book in the second half of it, which is called The Gift of the Unicorns. In the second half of the book, there is a history given that I took down verbatim as it was given to me by the history keepers of the cosmos. Mother had asked during the cycles of the fall, when almost everything went into forgetfulness, that they remain separate from the fall, that they are able to observe the fall, and that they record very carefully its history. During the history that I took down from them, and I mean it's a half a book, I could have taken down a library, but during the history of the fall, what is notable is that when there are catastrophic events, that consciousness does not rise from it, it falls from it. because of what consciousness is. If we, consciousness, the way people use it is really the term for awareness. It means how much can you know at any given moment? How much of reality can you access? That's consciousness or awareness. Consciousness is technically something different than awareness, but we will, for purposes of discussion, use it the way people out there are using it. So, in consciousness or awareness, how much you can access depends on how much energy you have. Because all initial, see, most of the unknown of life is accessed by your right brain, which accesses it in the form of feelings, which is non-cognitive thinking, not to be confused with emotions, which is based on desire. Feelings is non-cognitive thought. Right brain works through feelings. It accesses most of what can be known. Left brain accesses through its five senses only the little bit that is already known. It sucks up, with, for anybody in identity consciousness, the majority of that energy available to any organism, only surplus, if there is any, goes to access what right brain can access, which is the vast majority of what's out there. Now, so you can see that there's a tie between energy and consciousness. Shock, trauma, devastation, anything like that drains energy. And when energy is drained, consciousness falls, especially if it's on a massive scale. Now, let's go back to this issue of 2012. What is linear time? The cosmos itself has been traveling along strands in its journey of either descension or ascension. It's like the jets that fly through the sky. It's a very big sky. But there are specific airways, as United always advertises. United Airlines always advertises. There are airways. There are routes that airlines follow because the jet in front will radio back, oh, there's a bump over here. When you get here, you may want to tell people to put on their seatbelt because we just went through it, but it doesn't last for more than a few minutes. They are like in a convoy. They radio back to one another, the weather ahead, etc., because they're flying in routes. There are routes through space, if you will, along which cosmoses move. That creates linear time because there's the journey behind you on that loop. There's the journey in front of you on that route. So there's where you've been and there's where you're still going to be, and that creates a yesterday and a tomorrow. That is what makes linear time in the very big macrocosmic picture. The infinite mother has collapsed the seven directions. She collapsed with it those pathways as a method of growth. What the cosmos is a reflection or an expression of cells and DNA strands in Mother herself. She pulled everything together. She pulled all her DNA strands together within herself into one luminous strand. It pulled parallel DNA strands consisting of vast cosmic clusters into one. It consolidated all life into one space, collapsing space outside the cosmos and time. You know, what time literally is the movement of awareness through space. Space was collapsed. And also, in a very massive change that the Ring of Truth writes about, that light showers really should know, is what happened in August of 2006. When that happened, awareness stopped moving. Time collapsed then. Space now has collapsed as well. We have no future. We have no past. anything can be achieved in this moment. Growth is exponential and immediate and far more powerful than linear progression. That's why there is no 2012.
All right.
Oh, you know, Ruchir, let's take a quick break for commercials. I must remember to put those in. Please stay with us, folks, and I hope you can join us afterwards.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. My name is Al Mean, and you have joined us on the mystical world we live in. Ruchir, would you continue with the questions? I really like the questions that our listeners have been coming up with as emails. They've allowed us to go very deeply into some of the mysteries.
Well, this question is related to the 2012 question, and I think a lot of listeners are wondering exactly how to make sense of this notion of Earth changes and this, you know, this idea about the state of our planet. And, you know, it's, of course, usually very grim pictures are being painted, and there's this idea that, you know, it's got to give in sometime, and therefore all these cataclysmic events might happen. What would you say to that?
The planet as basically the home of that which created all life. If the mother and the father, and they are, dwelling on Earth, and my brothers and sisters out there, this is not just wishful thinking. This is a reality. Hours of my days are spent in communication with them, moving back and forth between the realms. They are here. They can, in an instant, clean up all pollution. There are great changes taking place. I have one of the masters in the classes that lives in Galveston in Texas, and he told me recently that for the first time ever, the Galveston's river is clean enough that fish can be caught in it. You know, I have a Native American that comes from California, and he says to me that for the first time on his drive through the desert, there are pools of wildflowers growing. I understand that we have statistics, but they were yesterday's statistics. The planet is alive and well in spite of the pollution that we are pouring into her. If mother and father cleaned that up in a minute, would we really learn? If we can learn our lessons, there's no need for it. If we learn that she's a living being, if we clean up our entertainment, we can't have our minds polluted by violence and discordance and depravity, and at the same time expect our environment to be clean. So it is necessary for us to live clean lives, to take responsibility for our actions. There is a new frequency band in the cosmos, and it deals with a autonomy. The nature of it can be described as autonomy. It's a vast building block of existence that hasn't always been there, and it's one of the two new ones. And in autonomy, we fix without by fixing within. And we fix it by loving it, by forgiving it, by embracing it. If we fight and feel guilty every time we look at the garbage heaps or the pollution, yet we continue through our entertainment, for example, to pollute our minds or our bodies, it's from the physical that the greatest influence is wielded. That is why we have been, through eons when there were still those that represented illusion, the battleground of good and illusion, of light and undeveloped light, because it is in physicality that the greatest ability lies to change our environment. We manifest our environment. So if there are things we want to change, we have to take that responsibility. But all things can be changed in the twinkling of an eye by the mother and the father's word. Everything that is spoken in mother's language comes true. It is so. And so, you know, how much do we enjoy the war games that we see as sensational moments in our day on the television? Disconnect your television. You know, choose videos that are life-enhancing and live a life of purity, and then let's watch how the world changes.
Right, and I mean, how would you, let's see, because, I mean, I take it a lot of listeners will be worried about, you know, politics and how, you know, be wondering how the divine would relate to sort of, well, the government that we have and such political matters. Do you think there should be something said about that?
Although there's much that can be said about that, portions of it is really not the time and place to discuss right now. But what can be discussed is that Mother knows that government is better than no government till the transition is made where there is a sacred manifestation of the Mother and Father's reign on Earth, until their city becomes fully visible. You know, there are instances, for instance, Sean David Morton had a most extraordinary situation where his future self came back to the present some years ago to talk to him about the future. And they were quite, he was quite clear about the fact that there was a world government under a mother, which he called the Emanuela. From the future, he came back to tell him that life had restored itself to a more pastoral life. I think he came back from what we would call maybe 2032. I'm just guessing. Sean's a dear friend, but I haven't spoken to him for quite a while. But this is part of this future in which these things will make a graceful transition. Shock drains energy, as we have pointed out. It's not conducive to have anarchy and say that this is better than the corrupt, quote, governments that we may or may not have. Of course we wish that they would live at higher consciousness. But again, let's change it within by governing our own lives with a higher consciousness.
All right, so, and then this, because I remember one of the group members, you know, asking about that as well the other day, like, you know, should we really be worried about this NAFTA superhighway construction and all the sort of politics around that, but probably we shouldn't really give it too much mind. Is that correct?
We should change what is before us each day. If there is physical change required and we are able to do it, we do it to the best of our abilities. Whatever else we don't like, we change within. But there are certainly ways in which the mother uses wrong choices of others, whether they are wrong or right, but wrong choices to her advantage. In other words, she is a past master, having worked closely with the mother of all life for some years. She is a past master at taking lemons and turning it into lemonade. If we take a look at this highway that they're building, it's part of the prophecies that this highway will be built. They might have one reason for building it, but what the actual use is that Mother will put that through to is that that is the highway along which the people from the inner earth will come. So it will be utilized by them, and they will actually utilize the Americas to come and appear for the first time on the outer earth. In the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms, we give you the populations in there, the way they live. We have maps of the inner earth and so forth. So my brothers and sisters, for you out there that are my light family, because I know that you are always hand-picked to reach these shows, that's a promise that Mother has given. The information we share is highly sacred. And people that pick up the book know they should. People that switch on this show know that they should. So I regard you as my family. So I just want to tell you that if you see only wet wood, there's not a chance of making the fire burn. And we had an illustration of that in our house recently where, you know, there's just soggy wood in the backyard, but I went and fetched it and made two beautiful big roaring fires in our two fireplaces because all I saw is the fire in the heart of the wood. I didn't see the wet wood. Be aware of what is in front of you. There's something inside you that you then have to change. If there's an action to be taken, you will know it, not by resisting life, but because of the silence that is born by not resisting life.
Yes, and this would underscore the point, I mean, that we, you know, should choose wisely what we feed into our minds, like in terms of entertainment, but I think also in terms of, like just, you know, the screens we watch, because we've got one, let's see, email question, which is, well, it mentions the obvious point about sort of depression that can result from watching the news or, you know, or what passes as the news. But there's also this question about how it seems that sitting behind the computer and going on the internet, how it seems that that can cause such an energy drain. Do you think there's anything to that? Any relation?
Anything that becomes a substitute for living is a grievous offense against the wonderful gift of life that is given to us by the mother. It prevents us from growing. Drugs, for instance, people that have used drugs and alcohol over a long period of time, they find that during that time there's hardly any growth. It may seem like they were growing, but looking back, those years are like lost years. Now, in many instances, it has kept them alive under conditions where they suffered greatly as children, etc. But the point is, anything that takes us away from our true inner deep emotions, from spontaneity, from interacting with life, from listening in the silence of our minds to the beauty of the communications from other hidden realms. My brothers and sisters, who would choose that over the mystery and the magic that abounds all around us? When we are engrossed constantly in our spare time, either in television or on the computer screen, we become unaware. And when we are unaware, we don't see the beauty of our relationships, the wonder of our wife or husband. I spoke recently to a divorce lawyer in one of my classes, one of the beautiful masters in there, and he says that one of the number one causes, I think he said the number one cause, at least in his state, of divorces is internet romances. One lives in the fantasy of the screen, and you do not see the wondrousness of the person that you live with. nor do you put your energy into building that relationship when it's so much safer to build one that's long distance over a computer screen. It's less intimate. And so you can open up to that person, whereas the other person might be harder to open up to. Our priorities become skewed. There should be a balance in our life, a time to live. And the sad thing of it is that unless we know how to create happiness, how to live, we have nothing to teach our children. What heritage do we leave them then? Education is but regurgitated conditioning. You know, I'm not knocking education, but we have to teach them how to think. You know, the emotional aspects of living is hardly ever stressed in education. So they don't know about the sub-personalities and creating balance inside ourselves with the inner child, the inner nurturer, the inner warrior, the inner sage, the wild woman, the instinctual nature, the importance of it, or the green man, or the higher mind. Unless they become familiar with these pieces, they live hollow lives. We're churning out people that walk by the thorn bush that is ablaze with the glory of the infinite in its blossoms and hardly even notice it. An unaware generation birthing another unaware generation. The addiction to the screens, the addiction to pornography on computer. It's a tremendous detriment to spirituality because any addiction is harmful in that it is obsessive. What is obsessive, just like what takes by surprise, it leaks energy. Leaked energy means lowered consciousness.
All right. Okay.
And let's take a quick commercial break.
Yes.
The fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey. She tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almaine continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From his background in the intangible functions of being, Almaine is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almaine, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And we have today with us Rogier Chardet, and he is prepared to ask us questions that would help us understand what lies behind the appearances of life. Rogier, thank you for helping us uncover the deeper mysteries of existence through the questions of both yourself and those that have emailed in to us. What would be the next question?
The next question is, I think, based upon the sort of the discoveries of, you know, the corruption of the old grids of deities that you talk about. And the question is really if angels are or have been corruptible as well.
The angels, over the cycles of the fall, have remained absolutely pristine. It is extraordinary. There are very few kingdoms that can boast of that. Most kingdoms have had portions of themselves lured this way or that way by those perpetrators who represented illusion, but not the angels. They were incorruptible. They are an amazing, amazing group.
But do you have any idea how to explain this?
Yes, I do. Part of it is their expansion horizontally. Now, to explain that, example, Mother sent me in 2005. She wanted me to talk to the Archangel Mi. M-I. The Archangel Mi is over all devas and angels and fairies, any devic kingdom like this. Not the angels. He was over the devic kingdoms. The angels, the elfin creatures, etc. Devas are the fairies, the devas. The angels themselves he was not over. So I went to the Archangel Mi with Mother's message and said, look, there is a specific type of angel called a Grimm that is non-life enhancing. Mother wants you to see if you can do something to put some laws in place with the pranks that they were playing. If they continue to live this way, two raises from now, when the planet raises up two more times, they will be pulled into oblivion. Oh, that's terrible, says the Archangel Mi. What shall I do about it? I said, well, I suggest you put some guidelines in place, warn them that this is coming, but give them some rules to follow that have some consequences, the way one would start to rein in a very unruly child. Yes, yes, that might be the way to do it. I said, well, so what do you propose we do? Because I have to take it back and Mother has to write it in the Book of Life, which becomes the laws of existence. Well, I sat there for a good hour. Me couldn't come up with an answer. He said, I'm not good at power thinking. How do you do that? I said, well, part of the problem is that when you power think, problem solve the way humanity does, we can't see the bigger picture as well. For you to be able to feel and know what's going on in every being, of all the vastness of space, of all these little creatures, of the devas and the fairies and the elementals, you have to be expanded. When you're expanded, it's a horizontal axis in the way that you access life. The vertical axis is the analytical, the problem solving, the information gathering and acting upon it, access. But we can't really access that big of a picture. Oh, he said. I came back 4 days in a row. He couldn't solve the problem. I finally, on the fourth day, had to propose a problem. He felt that one portion of it was too harsh, so we amended that. I said, well, what about this? That felt right. But that was the only way we could get it solved. They are so expanded into the feeling side of life that they don't analyze, and they're not corruptible by being persuaded that right is wrong and wrong is right. So they feel everything through their heart. and the heart does not lie.
All right. I think that's a good answer.
That's a good question. Thank you.
All right. Our next question comes from, I think, actually, someone who listens to these shows, and she asks about her culture. She's a Native American herself, and she's wondering, she feels that there's a lot of victimization there, and yet that it's not really politically correct to say that. You've dealt a lot with Native American communities and the sort of the spirituality, I think. So what do you know of this?
The victimization is from whom? I'm not quite sure if she means
her background, her community, really.
So victimization as against her race or within the Native community against
females? Within the Native community. It's within the Native community that she's asking about.
Really? Okay. And the victimization, did she give any explanation as to if it's against females in spirituality or is it against her living a certain way? Did she give any indication what she's talking about?
No, what she meant was, what she was talking about was the sort of, what has been done to us by the white man kind of approach.
I see. She is concerned that others in the community feel like victims.
Yeah, and
have I got it right finally?
Yes, and especially the idea that she's not really allowed to sort of address that kind of idea to begin
right.
with.
Yes. Well, let's look at victimizations and Native Americans, and let's tackle it from three directions.
All right.
First of all, it is ironic that in races where they live spirituality more, such as Judaism, Native American and indigenous peoples, if you take a look at Armenia is very feminine, is surrounded by very masculine neighbors in terms of masculine, more cerebral nations surrounding them. These are feminine nations or races. They are spiritual in their lives and so forth. What is ironic is that you find in those races that there is male domination as far as spiritual decision making and the spiritual. Now, there are exceptions. The Mohawk nations, for instance, if my understanding is correct, they're very matriarchal. But there are exceptions. However, many, many indigenous peoples have a sovereignty established for the male when it comes to the spiritual, which is discriminating against the female. It is this victimizing of the female as having an equal voice in the feminine, in spiritual matters. For instance, I'm also thinking of Mormonism, because the same thing happened to Mormonism. In Mormonism, the male has the voice in the spiritual matters and decision-making, and they were very persecuted by the more masculine peoples around them, and hence the big exodus that led to Utah. So where there is victimization of the female in spiritual life by spiritual nations or people, you find that they attract the same from the outside in. It creates victimization against them. So that's number one, to do with victimization. So number two, to do with victimization, is that there have been four building blocks of existence, four vast frequency bands. And those vast frequency bands had characteristics, and I discovered this January 2005. And when I discovered it, it was incredible. It was as though the Fibonacci sequence was discovered by me, because then it was everywhere. Sexual development, relationships, social development. Well, In development of culture, the same was the case. There were four stages of development. Stage one was tribal life, of which Native Americans, of course, had for eons. Now, the tribal life is uniformity, and there's total dependency on the tribe. You don't start doing your own thing because you conform. But in return, there's total support. If you're ill, people come and take the child and nurture your child till you're well. They nurture you. They hunt for you for the winter. They make sure you have a buffalo robe. They take care of you when you're old. They take care of you in childbirth. They take care of children if parents are gone. There's a total taking care of one another. You know, you find some of that in Mormonism as well. So, for instance, Mormon farmers during the Great Depression, they refused any state assistance. They were totally taken care of by their own church. But you conform. That's the price you have to pay. Uniformity. That's stage one. That is the stage of no growth. There is hardly any growth and change that happens. Hence, tribal life existed in the same way for thousands of years without changing. But you know what? Stagnation pulls in forced change. Hence, the plundering and the sad way in which other nations came in and plundered their culture, which is beautiful. I have a full-blooded Native American little daughter that is the love of my life. I lived among them for 5 years. The plundering that took place is horrible beyond belief, but that's because they resisted change. The second stage is diversity within uniformity, and instead of dependence, there's a codependence. So what you have there is Native Americans, for instance, embody this in that most of them work in the cities, but they go back to the tribe when they need something, or they go back to powwow on the weekends, which is, again, a way of rebonding together as Native people, even though they may be an architect in the big city. But they don't deviate too far from their tribe, even though they step out of the tribe. And there's codependent relationship that is established. And that's the next phase. It's got a little more growth, but growth is still very, very slow because you're scared to step out of the box because otherwise, you know, the tribe loses control of you, and when they do that, they will not support you. So the third one is total independence. Total independence is where most mechanized, you know, big city societies are, where you hardly even know who your neighbor is, so you have to have ambulance insurance, auto insurance, house insurance, illness insurance, you know, funeral insurance, on and on, because nobody's even going to bury you or whatever because of this total detachment. Although that does allow you to choose, like, for instance, people eat sushi, you know, they eat Jewish foods, they know about Hanukkah. It makes things more homogenized. The independence allows you to choose the best from whatever world you want. There's a much faster growth there, but there's not a lot of emotional nurturing. The next stage is interdependence. And it's unity within diversity. The unity within diversity is that you have one goal. Like, for instance, let's say everybody wants to eat raw food. You have a raw food community, but within that community, people live their own lives. They just contribute in a way to keep that ideal alive. The two beginning bands of compassion, if you will, those two building blocks of the tribal life, the complete dependence, and the second one, which is codependence, has ceased to exist. So where there was resistance to changing, it brought in this attack from the outside. It has ceased to exist, meaning that those who try to live it will have less ability to do so. They do not want to hear something else. My, you know, my sister that finds that they prefer to play the victim role, unfortunately, victimhood can become like a label. I find less of it amongst the Sioux. I find them more living in the moment. And whereas, you know, some of the other tribes around there and bands also, I have found to be very attached to that label. But
right.
The part that's overlooked is that they victimize one another as well. You have incredibly wealthy Native American nations with oil on their lands living next to other bands of the same nature nation that are in poverty. But they will not help them because if they do, the logic is, if they do, even though they live 40 people in a house, if, and that's an accurate number in some cases, even though they're in terrible poverty, we don't want to help them because if we do, they won't get a government subsidy. Well, whatever government subsidy there is clearly not enough. But there isn't the interrelationship that is necessary for growth. You cannot force people to see what they're not ready to see. But what you can do is see your highest. And because you are hooked to that soul group and possibly one of the leaders spiritually in that soul group, it will change it like a clean stream of water coming into a stagnant pond. You cannot make people listen when they don't want to hear.
Yes, and the irony, you know, which might be of interest to the woman who asked the question, you know, the irony in case of Native Americans is, of course, I think something you mentioned maybe in History of the Americas as well about the white race that lived here. Okay, the white, sorry, about the white race.
Well, yes, you're quite right. I did mention that, I think, only yesterday, actually. If you read, and we have a 2-CD set that speaks of the modern history of the Americas, starting approximately 600 B.C. and ending approximately 300 A.D., when there was a massive slaughter of the white race that lived here on the Americas. In California, or I'm not sure if it's California or Nevada, but under Death Valley, there is an entire city with mummies in it, city streets, everything. There used to be big cities on this land, and there were white people here, and there was a massive slaughter. And, of course, that does create karma. There is a justice in the cosmos. If we see injustice, my brothers and sisters, it is illusion. And I unfortunately see that we have come to the end of our show. We are delighted to have you always with us. Thank you for being our listening audience, and we'll speak to you again next week. Thank you, Rahir.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.